to another episode of Tap Outs and Touchdowns.
That's right, everybody. It's another football episode of Tap Outs and Touchdowns. As always, it's your guy, Bully Rye, alongside my football show co-host, Banker Bill. Bill, what's up, bud? How's everything going?
What's happening, man? Everything's really good, and I'm just excited to talk more football. Look forward to Wednesdays, right? Because we actually get to talk football.
Not only just like Wednesday, so we can talk football. A matter of like, it's our time to talk. Like, especially when we actually get to get together in person. If we're with Shauna or with your daughter Katie, it's like, oh my God, they're talking sports again. Can we do something else?
They do. So they don't even let us hang out sometimes because they don't want to hear us talk.
Yeah, like, oh my God,
that happened.
It did. So a peek behind the curtain. I mean, this is a podcast, so we can kind of do whatever we want to do.
Sure.
Unfortunately for Banker Bill, he's dealing with some stuff that I've been dealing with lately, as far as his home air conditioning not working the way that it should. And he had lent me a portable AC unit that I used in my house last summer when my AC crapped out for the second straight year. And so Bill's wife reached out to me. He's like, hey, can you bring it by? He's like, unless y'all want to swing by on your way home, swing by my house and pick it up. And I think her text to me said something like, yeah, I'm honestly afraid how much y'all are going to talk because we got stuff to do. And I'm like, all right. That's what you say, I'll take it. But nevertheless, yeah, it's like that. Like we get to talking sports, and that's part of the reason why we started this podcast. So yeah. If you're watching live, wherever it is that you're watching, make sure you leave a comment, be it Facebook, X, or YouTube. That's the third one. Make sure you leave a comment and be part of the conversation, because we do have some stuff to get to tonight. And before we get into actual, like, all the football stuff that we're going to talk about, we're going to go to Homer's Corner, and I'm going to start off with some somber news for us Braves fans, as it's not really a secret anymore. Spencer Strider, for his second time in the pros, has gone under a UCL surgery. It is not Tommy John's, but he is out for the entire season. He lasted all of like a week and a half in Major League Baseball this season, led the world in strikeouts last year. He is only 25 years
old. Led the world
in strikeouts. I'm not even talking about the league. Like, dude is throwing heat. And Spencer Strider now out for the year. And Bill, this is just, it's really unfortunate because, again, the guy's only 25. He's a product out of Clemson. So some of the people that watch this show, being in our area, know him from that school. Mm-hmm. But really unfortunate to be going through some of these issues. Bill, I know we don't normally spend a lot of time on Homer's Corner. There was a report that there was a pitcher in Major League Baseball that made an argument that the pitch clock is resulting in all these elbow injuries. Mm-hmm. Would you tend to agree with that sentiment?
Well, it's the second year of the pitch clock, right? So we had it last season. We didn't see it last season. But, yeah, in fact, I believe the Players Association has filed a grievance against Major League Baseball that the pitch clock might be causing the spike in arm injuries that we're seeing. I guess we'll have to find out if they're going to investigate it, but it is a little bit fishy seeing it's only the second year, yeah.
I mean, listen, worst-case scenario, yeah, maybe you make a longer pitch clock to give them a little more time.
Right. Yeah.
Because I mean,
or just get rid of it. Come on. It's ridiculous anyway. Over 100 years of baseball, and suddenly we need a pitch clock. Stop it.
I'm not opposed to the pitch clock to speed up the games, but like we went to the Greenville Drive championship game last year.
Yeah.
And we looked down and we looked up and we were in the sixth inning. So
yeah,
maybe the idea of speeding up the game is a little too fast. And they did it too quickly. So
yeah.
Best wishes to Spencer Strider. The Braves are going to have a really big hole to fill going forward. He was my second round pick in our fantasy baseball draft. So it hurt me a good bit as my ace of my staff is now gone as well. But well wishes to Spencer Strider. Bill, you're wearing a hat in honor of your Homer's Corner tonight. to say. You want to talk about the New York Rangers. Let's hear what you got to say.
Super excited about my New York Rangers. I'm a huge New York Rangers fan. In fact, I text my dad, and my dad gets in here in the podcast every once in a while. I text him every time they win a game. We say, let's go Rangers. The other guy, you know, types back, all right, let's go. You know, 55 wins this season out of 82 games. And the NHL actually gives away a trophy when you are the best team in the regular season. It's called the President's Trophy, and the Rangers won it for, I believe, the fourth time in their existence. And they're one of the original teams. Fourth time in their existence, they win the President's Trophy, best team in the regular season, but only eight times in the past since they've been giving away that trophy. I think since the 60s has that team actually gone on to win the Stanley Cup. So let's hope we become the ninth, but really, hey, you got it's home ice advantage throughout the playoffs. They don't have a Super Bowl where it's a neutral site. So even the Stanley Cup Finals, if you make it there, you get the home ice advantage in the Stanley Cup Finals. So super, you don't not try to win it type thing. Like, you don't not try to be the one seed in the NFL because the one seeds don't win this, that type of thing. You try to win it. You want to be the President's Trophy winners, and they are this year. So way to go, New York Rangers. And hopefully we come out of this season with the Stanley Cup championship. I'd be really excited about that.
You know, let's go a bonus homer's corner. Congratulations to the Greenville Swamp Rabbits for making the playoffs in the ECHL. And I believe they won their division.
They won the Southern Division, yeah.
The South Carolina Stingrays missed the playoffs altogether this year. So
they must be terrible.
I guess they weren't obviously not as good as last year if the Rabbits are in the playoffs and the Stingrays are not. So congratulations to the Greenville Swamp Rabbits. That's good stuff here. All right, Bill, let's get into what we're going to talk about on the show, and that's all things football. And let's start off with the University of Michigan as they receive penalties for recruiting violations that date back to the pandemic. From what I read, two recruits were improperly communicated with during a dead period when COVID-19 was a big deal. We talked about a lot of the coaches in the university settled with the NCAA to bring up these penalties that include, I believe, three years probation, a fine, and restrictions to recruiting. The penalized coaches will have 1 year show cause orders per the announcement from the NCAA. But Jim Harbaugh was not one of those guys that settled with this situation. Bill, when we sort of alluded to it that Jim Harbaugh knew something was coming when he decided to go back to the NFL. Do you think this is exactly what we were talking about here?
I think it's probably part of it. Yeah. Yeah, I honestly do. I think he knew that it was coming and they were going to have issues and they were going to be incurring penalties. And I mean, we saw this with Pete Carroll back in the USC days, the real USC.
I swear to God, you must have been watching the Cat Cave this week.
Cross the bow. I didn't actually. It's been a busy week for me. But cross the bow. Those shots fired. Anyway, the real USC. But they had issues obviously there. He knew stuff was coming. He ends up taking the job with the Seahawks. I think this is the same situation with Harbaugh. And he just got out and made sure that he didn't. They still haven't finished the investigation into him, by the way. That's still pending. And I don't know if that's going to be – that'll be penalties to him that don't matter because he's not in the NCAA anymore unless he tries to go back. Maybe further penalties to Michigan. These are pending penalties. The penalties they're talking about are really not that bad. There might be some recruiting restrictions, but there's no suspensions or anything so far. That might just be Harbaugh. But, yeah, so far it doesn't look really, really bad. It's just that, hey, the national champions got busted for talking to guys when they shouldn't have been.
Yep. Shout out Michael Davis of the Cat Cave over on the Fans for Sports Network because he made the same comment. We did mock drafts this week on that show, and he drafted Marshawn Lloyd, and he said from the real USC. And I'm like, nah, bro. The University of South Carolina was a college before California was a state. The real USC resides in the state of South Carolina. So you can say because of their football championships and you know, a bunch of really famous people that came out of USC and that support USC because they're out in California. You say all you want, but the real USC resides an hour and a half south of us in Columbia. So, getting back to Michigan. Yeah.
You say
yeah,
that.
I will stand my ground and I will never give up. The Carolina debate is a little more tenuous because North Carolina was established much before the University of South Carolina was, but I digress. Yeah, listen, I'm not a big fan of Jim Harbaugh. I prefer Michigan to Ohio State.
Yeah.
Because I cannot stand Ohio State. I can't stand the fans. I can't stand their traditions. I can't stand their color scheme. You name it. But Jim Harbaugh rubbed me the wrong way when Colin Cowherd kicked him off his show a few years ago. Do you remember seeing this?
No.
He was interviewing Jim Harbaugh. It was early in Jim Harbaugh's stint at Michigan. And because this is when Colin Cowherd was still on ESPN.
Okay.
And Cowherd was trying to interview him, and Harbaugh was just giving him these really short, pointed answers. And Cowherd was just like, you know, when people normally come on my show, this is an opportunity to promote your school and to promote your program. And Harbaugh just basically like, I don't need to promote my school. Like we can promote ourselves enough without your show. And eventually Colin Cowherd was like, all right, well, thanks, Jim Harbaugh. I've never had that happen before. So that's when he first started rubbing me the wrong way. And then obviously we had sort of heard something during COVID about Michigan potentially facing penalties with an investigation being opened. And now we see the results. And then obviously what happened with the game film, like we saw this year where they had a staffer that was buying tickets to go to other stadiums to scout other teams during their home games. So listen, there's a reason why Jim Harbaugh is back in the NFL. Whatever penalty he could be dealing with from the NCAA may not make a difference, because his dream job, I think, in college football was to go back to Michigan and win a national championship. He did it, and I don't think we're at a point in time in college football now where you can go about vacating wins and negating national championships. Reggie Bush will receive his Heisman back at some point in his career. But as far as Michigan goes, it's more or less the slap on the wrist for the University of Michigan. PJ Steven was in the chat. He said, we talking about who went over in the latest foosball game? PJ Steven, obviously the co-host on the wrestling show, go over means who won in pro wrestling.
I know. So, I know. Yeah,
I'm saying for anybody who's joining the football show that don't particularly watch professional wrestling, I'm trying to help them out. You know what I'm saying?
Which all is right. Pretty much everybody.
Pretty much. No, that's not true.
It's like all the people that believe USC was actually South Carolina and not Southern California. It's like all those people.
You know, it's media propaganda. It's ESPN that called you Southern Cal USC for so many years. That's why people refer to them as USC.
Nobody thinks of USC and thinks of South Carolina, except for people that went to University of South Carolina. I hate to tell you
that. People in the Carolinas.
Because I was not – I didn't – no. I don't even think they do.
No. Shannon Smith, the other co-host on the Cat Cave with me and Michael Davis over on the Fans First Sports Network, cheap plug, he even said on the show, he's like, listen – when growing up, I always knew USC is South Carolina.
That's
all it was.
From the Carolinas? So it is just the Carolinas? It was totally region-locked? Yeah. And the rest of the entire world, the entire globe, flat or round, thinks that USC is California. That's Southern California.
Listen,
to
each their own, there's a gigantic
part of the population. I was two states away, and USC is Southern California. I was two states away in Florida. I'm just saying.
With all due respect, I don't care. If 90% of the country views Southern Cal,
I never heard it USC, until I moved here. Like USC, I went to the South Carolina game and they're like USC, USC, and I looked at you and go, why are they cheering for Southern Cal?
Because that's the abbreviation of the University of South Carolina, Bill. You're getting me heated, and I'm okay with it, but I don't care if 90% of the country says that USC is in Southern California. 90% of the population is wrong. USC
doesn't matter, Pedro. It doesn't matter. It's what everybody perceives. It's all about perception.
Yes, they are. Pedro.
No. You,
I just nobody got to telling Bill.
Again, nobody cares.
The University of South Carolina was a university before the state of California existed as a state. So you talk, if you talk about Carolina versus Carolina, the University of North Carolina was a university before South Carolina. So you have an argument there. Like it's hard for me to argue that logic when I'm arguing that logic for the USC moniker. But I digress. We've got some more football to get to. So let's get back on topic here. Bill, you gave me this news right before we went on the air that up until I believe it was 2019. They were the NCAA and the armed forces were offering waivers to players so that they can enter the NFL draft and go play. Grandpa Bill, your dad, Bill Tomer Jr. says USC is in California. You're looking, you know, you're uninvited to the cookout. That's all I'm going to say.
Wait, so, is it a USC cookout? You mean a Trojans cookout? Is that what we're doing?
I swear to God. All right. So all you right. Armed Forces players used to be able to get a waiver to go directly to the NFL. They've now, I guess, kind of reversed that decision or gone back to the original plan behind this rule that if you play at one of the armed forces, so we're talking Navy, Air Force, Army, you must go and serve 2 years into the military before you can go and enter the NFL and play for an NFL team. I would imagine that means you're ineligible for the draft for 2 years after that point. Bill, what are your thoughts on this? Listen, I understand going to a military university and you know the meaning behind it, but how do you feel about them outright saying, like, listen, you can play football for us, but it doesn't mean you're going to play football professionally because you got to serve 2 years for us in active duty?
It's tough. And I think part of this conversation people might be thinking, well, this is fairly insignificant, right? Because, I mean, who cares? I mean, we all love the Army-Navy game, honestly, because it's the last, you know, game in college football before the bowl season every year. But the reality is the Air Force Academy has been fantastic in football over the last few years. In fact, they have a 744 winning percentage, which is the ninth best winning percentage in the FBS. And it's what's ninth best among group of five teams, which is pretty freaking good over the last, well, since they suspended this rule in 2019. And now how are you going to recruit? How are you going to recruit these guys when you say to them, hey, you know, even if you're really, really good, you've got to go and serve 2 years and miss those 2 years of paychecks, everything else, even though obviously you're getting paid in NIL deals and maybe these guys will get some of that in college. But I mean, I think that's going to absolutely kill recruiting. And unfortunately, Air Force is probably the one that's going to hurt the most from this. And was the military running out of people? But are like the 15 guys that, you know, we're going to go to the NFL every year from these, that's probably even stretching it, right? Maybe the eight that are going to go to the NFL every year. Are those guys that important at this point? Like why would you do this to these eight kids every year? I don't really understand, but it's a federal policy. Honestly, the article doesn't really say who changed it. It just changed.
Yeah. I mean, there were guys that you would see come out of these military schools that would go apply for a special waiver and they were granted. And now it just sounds like that they're not going to be granted going forward. I'm with you. Like, are you that short of soldiers that you need like the extra eight guys that are going to go to the NFL?
Let's not call them soldiers. Let's call them officers first. Officers. It's going to be officers that are coming out of the university. But still, like you said, are you that short? Are you that worried about this? Now, granted, these are different breeds of men. They're fantastic. They're serving their country. Like, obviously, excuse me, they're different. And the reason they join these schools is because they're different. But you know, you can't, if they're football players, and they are football players, right? Obviously, they're going to the universities, they're going to the armed forces universities. They want to be football players in college. I'm sure that, you know, some of them, if they were to develop and didn't realize they had a shot at the NFL, would have gone to other schools like Southern California. I'm sorry, I had to do it again. just can't stop. Anyway, they would have done things like that, but now here they're going to be, you know, they went to an armed forces university, you know, armed forces college, and now they're going to have to go into the military for 2 years, even though the NFL's, you know, kind of come knocking. So
let me ask you a question, Bill.
I feel bad.
With the idea of this new structure for college football that we talked about, it was either last week or the week prior, where they build this big, giant super conference. And they would incorporate the NIL and the transfer portal and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But you would have this gigantic super conference with these new rules in place. Would the military universities, do you think they ought to be included in that gigantic conference? Because right now, if I'm not mistaken, Air Force is in a conference.
Yeah.
Navy is in a conference. The Army might be in a conference at this point. They're no longer independent universities. So do you think that they would serve a purpose in that gigantic super conference that would eventually be like college football division one? Or do you think they should, since they're not going to be able to play in the NFL, they should sit back with the FCS schools?
I mean, absolutely. The Air Force is in the Mountain West, which is not a terrible conference, right? That's the conference that the Pac-12 teams are now going to be playing in that schedule and all that stuff. They were a decent team last year. They were one of the last undefeated teams in college football. And
like ranked 19th in the country and undefeated. So,
yeah, absolutely. They should have been included, or they would be included in the super, you know, the 70 team super conference. Yeah, they're one of the top 50 teams in college football. I just talked about it. They have the ninth highest winning percentage in the last, 5 years. So absolutely they would. And I think this is going to hurt them. Unfortunately, it's tough. I mean, the Air Force Academy, obviously their funding is different. When you're talking about universities or state universities, things like that, they get a lot of money from college football, and that allows them to have other sports, pretty much all. There's only two revenue makers really in well, now there might be three, because women's college basketball is really kind of taking a step forward here. But I mean, usually it's just basketball and football make the money for all these universities, and they are able to have water polo. Well, the Air Force obviously going to be a little bit different, but you would think that this kind of rule is going to hurt these teams a little bit. Obviously, they're getting the money from the conferences for like TV deals and stuff like that. So I don't know. I just think all around, I don't understand it. There is no explanation for it, in the article that I read. So it's unfortunate for that school and those kids, mainly the kids, honestly. I feel like there's just going to be kids that choose not to go there.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think ultimately that's going to be your biggest downfall, is that kids are going to, well, if I'm not going to, I want to go play football.
Yeah.
And yes, I'd like to serve my country, but my goal is to make the NFL. And if I can make the NFL out of a military school, that's what I want to do. We got some comments in here, but we do need to move on here, because the UFL week three has come and gone. And listen, it looks like this is going to work. When you look at viewership from week three, we saw a game on Sunday afternoon, and remember, this was Masters weekend. And on Sunday afternoon, St. Louis, San Antonio drew in more than 1 million viewers. I mean, the other words were kind of down. You see the attendance in Michigan sort of going down each week. I believe they started somewhere around 10,000, and then they were like 7,000 last week. Mm-hmm. But I think Michigan's had three straight home games, which is crazy to think about too. But week three, if you didn't get to watch it, viewership in general, I mean, again, 1 million for the last game. You had 800,000 for Memphis, Birmingham, not almost another million for Houston, Michigan. Bill, seeing what we've seen through week three, does it look like we talk about attendance not looking great in some of these stadiums, but that's not what the UFL is looking for. If they can continue to keep the sponsorships and keep people watching on TV, that's where it matters. So what we've seen through 3 weeks of the UFL, how optimistic are you that we are going to see a UFL in 2025?
Well, the financial structure is a little bit weird. I mean, the networks kind of own these teams now, right? That's kind of, I think Fox owns like shares in the teams. But you're talking about the numbers. Let's just look at them really quick, okay? I actually have a really cool graphic from UFL Access off of Facebook. But there were overall ratings for the sports that were on TV over the weekend. Just to kind of add another argument for this, that the UFL could actually be a real thing for years to come.
Please do.
So the Masters, over their two events, Saturday and Sunday, averaged 8.09 million viewers. That's a lot. The Masters, obviously one of the biggest, maybe the biggest golf tournament all year long. It actually probably is the biggest golf tournament all year
long. Tiger Woods was playing. All that stuff. I get it.
NASCAR came in. So this is all sports. NASCAR came in at number two. They had two events over the weekend. They averaged 1.556 million viewers, 1.556. The NBA came in third, two events, 1.3 million viewers. The UFC, which had a fight on Saturday night, they had one event. They had 1.2 million viewers that watched that. Coming in fifth, the UFL averaged 842,000 viewers over their four events. They beat the NHL. The NHL over five events had 615,000. College football had an event. I have no idea what was on TV for college football. I don't. Maybe like spring games or something?
Yeah, they were spring games. I think Alabama spring game played Saturday.
There were two spring games, I guess. 571,000 viewers averaged. The Premier League, which is on NBC every Saturday morning, and there's a whole bunch of like USA has a whole bunch of games as well. There were five Premier League games on, and they're pushing this hard. I mean, Ted Lasso was created to help push the Premier League for NBC, 518,000 viewers. Major League Baseball had 7 baseball games on this weekend, averaged 478,000 viewers. The Major League Soccer, which is blowing up in the United States, everybody talks about the great success of Major League Soccer, and they continue to expand. They had 3 games on over the weekend, 242,000 viewers averaged. That's next to UFL's 842,000. I think looking at these numbers, it would not make sense for these networks to drop these games right now, because there are people watching sports that, you know, if you're watching sports, you're watching the UFL right now. That they ranked 5th among all major sports on TV this weekend.
Well, we're going to talk about the schedule this weekend. This is the weekend that they're going to kick themselves in the foot, because they've got 2 games playing at the same time on Saturday. And I think it's more or less going to be regionally locked. But listen, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, get a hold of this show, because we are doing the job. We are helping to promote your league. This should be the official UFL podcast.
Official.
I haven't heard anybody else covering and promoting your league like Banker Bill and your guy Bully Rye are. And so let's get right into week 3. We saw 4 more games, as Bill just alluded to, and some barn burners once again, especially in Arlington. The Arlington Renegades, a heartbreaking loss to the DC Defenders, 29-28. The second consecutive week there was a multi-scored lead in the fourth quarter, where the team that trailed came back to win, as the DC Defenders did. But listen, DC Defenders, I texted you during this game. I was like, the Defenders are in trouble. And despite this win, I still agree. I still allude to that. The DC Defenders are 2-1. But when you look at this team, Jordan Ta'amu carried the team on his back, but he had under 200 yards passing. He did average 5.9 yards a carry, but it looked like he is the guy here at DC, as he should be. They keep trying to feed Cameron Harris from Miami, and 9 carries, 27 yards, three yards per carry. They're still trying to feed him, but it's not really going well for him. But again, DC trailed in this game 28-18 with 2:08 left. Scored with 48 seconds left. And to me, it's become the most exciting. People like watching kickoffs or certain aspects of the game. But to me, the most fun, the most entertaining play to watch in football is 4th-and-12 from the 28 to continue your drive and to keep the ball to go up and win. And they converted the 4th-and-12 onside kick. They kicked the field goal with 4 seconds left, and DC goes over, to coin the phrase that DJ Stephen brought in earlier.
See what you did there. This is the second week in a row we've seen this, Ryan, where we've seen that 4th-and-12, the onside kick that the UFL is doing instead of the actual onside kick that never works in the NFL. But yeah, this 4th-and-12 has worked 2 weeks in a row, and the team that converted it ended up winning the game. Last week it was the San Antonio Brahmas beat the Memphis Showboats with 3 seconds left, and then this was 4 seconds left, kick a field goal, win the game. It's a game changer. This is a game changer. You're making way more exciting, way more compelling, and way more interesting football games from this. Now, is it a traditionalist point of view? No, would they like this? Not. Probably not. But it's way better than an onside kick. And I think it's harder to do in the NFL. In the NFL, you have, you know, very good defenses, and it, you know, 4th-and-12 seems insane. Now, remember, they tweaked this a little bit. The XFL, it was 4th-and-15.
Yes.
And we saw that happen a couple times. Now it's 4th-and-12. I didn't see this game, thanks to my dad, who, if he's still watching, I would have to give him the business, but I'm not going to. I wasn't able to watch the game. That's right, you were texting me about it. But yeah. Yeah.
No, but I mean, to your point, like, yeah, they changed it from 4th-and-15 to 4th-and-12. But like in the NFL, prior to the season coming up, you'd be able to convert like a surprise onside kick. Now they have to declare the onside kick. So listen. The NFL adopted the XFL's kickoff rule from last season. Maybe at some point they adopt something like this. Maybe not 4th-and-12. Maybe they go 4th-and-15 or 4th-and-20 from the 20-yard line instead of the 28. The
traditionalists, they lost their minds. People lost their minds when we moved the extra point. They lost their minds, and that made the game more interesting.
It guys did. It
now. Yes, it did. And then now they lost their minds this year when they said, oh, this is how we're going to do the kickoffs like the XFL did last season. They lost their minds. Could you imagine the traditionalists, how crazy they would go if they said, we're getting rid of the onside kick because it's only completed like 0.4% of whatever the ridiculous number is. That it's terrible. It never gets, they never, we never get onside kicks. But if they change it, how many people would scream that you're screwing up the game of football? It would be, I don't even know if the NFL would want to do that because of the people that would just absolutely, yeah. it'd be the squeaky wheel. There'd be, you know, 88% of the people would go, yes, this is going to be great. And 12% would just make so much noise that the NFL would feel like everybody felt that way.
See, in fairness, the UFL does not apply the XFL kickoff rule. They don't sit back like they did in the XFL.
No, so they like, don't. No.
The NFL adopted the rule, but the UFL didn't.
Moved away from it.
I think next year they ought to, but let's get back to the game here. DC, again, did not look great in this game. Could not get the ball going on. I mean, couldn't get the ball going on the ground traditionally. Jordan Ta'amu had to do it his own. But if you look at the other side, Arlington falls to 0-3 with this heartbreaking loss. Luis Perez doing everything he can. 290 yards, 2 touchdowns. You still got them feeding Devion Smith at running back. 63 yards, 4.5 a carry. And Tyler Vaughns continues to show out. Tyler Vaughns, I think he had like 6 catches in the first quarter or something like that. And he settled down towards the end. But he had 9 catches for 109 yards and a touchdown in this game. Bill, I know you said you didn't get to watch this game. We were excited to watch Arlington, the defending XFL champions. But we said it. I've said it multiple times. They started off slow last year, came back to win. They're 0-3. It's going to be a lot harder for them to make up this margin, considering, again, there's only 10 weeks in the season. Do you think Arlington's going to be able to put themselves back into contention, or you think there needs to be some sort of change for Arlington to be able to be competitive and to finally get a win this season? Because there's right now they're sitting in the bottom of the league with the Houston Roughnecks.
That's a really good question. I think Arlington needs to learn how to play defense. The offense is not the problem. You know, it's weird. As we talk about, there's one thing I feel like that stands out in this league that two things. I'm gonna change that. Let's amend that. Two things that really kind of stand out in this league that really make the offense work. And there are two things that are glaring. A lot of teams don't have a run game. There's very few teams that have a run game. But if you do, if you cannot be one-dimensional, usually you look a whole lot better. However, you could fix that by having a pretty good passing game, usually a good quarterback, a really good quarterback play. And Arlington has that. Luis Perez leads the XFL in passing.
Mm-hmm.
At 290 yards passing this week, he looks good, but they can't
2 play touchdowns, defense. No picks. Yeah.
They can't play defense. They're not playing defense well. So they have to learn how to play defense, or else this season they might as well throw it away. Like you said, they started terribly last. They're 4-6 in that. And I think we're doing the same silly stuff where it's not the top 4 teams that are going to make the playoffs. It's the 2 teams from each conference. So, you know, there's always a shot because there's nobody running away in their conference, in the XFL conference, than there like there is so far in the other conference, in the USFL conference. So we'll see what happens, but they definitely have to learn how to play defense.
Yeah, once again, the DC Defenders get the 29-28 win. We talked about like the fact that they were down 10 and they score 11 thanks to the 2-point, 3-point, 1-point extra point rules too.
It's incredible.
So you're never truly out of it. Like you have to have I'm trying to do the math here. A two score lead in the UFL is what, like 11 points or more? It's got to be 11 points because a touchdown score
lead. Yeah. I mean it's
12. Yeah. It's 12 because you could potentially score 9 points on a touchdown, 6 on a touchdown, and a 3-point extra point, and then a field goal that puts you at 12. A two score lead in the UFL is 12 points.
Well, look at it this way, Ryan. The Arlington Renegades kicked a field goal to go up 28-18 with 2:08 left to go in the game.
Yep.
At that point, you as an Arlington fan, you're thinking, we got this. Like 10-point lead with 2 minutes left? Come on. DC hasn't done anything all day. They've only scored 18 points. They're not going to score. They score 11 in the last 2:08 because of the absolutely crazy onside kick rule. And it's fantastic. That's great. It's so much fun. I mean, when I looked at the score, I went, you got to be, because you were telling me, you were texting me going, hey, DC's in trouble. And I'm looking at the score going, it's a close game. But and I saw 28-18. And then I looked back and went, you've got to be kidding me.
It happened again. And it was the same TV crew that was on the call for it, too. It was back-to-back weeks. They got to see that game. So phenomenal. Again, you talk about exciting football. That's what you're going to get in the UFL. Now, this game, maybe not so much. The Birmingham Stallions taking on the Memphis Showboats. Birmingham 33-14 win. Bill, I don't know if you got to watch this game. Let's start off with Memphis.
I did watch. Yeah, because, I did get to watch some of this one. Yep. This was a late game.
Yeah, one of the second to worst team in the USFL division. Case Cookus, 139 yards passing. Ain't going to get it done. And they got beat up. I'll save the Birmingham stuff in a minute, but he got pulled in the fourth quarter, and they had everybody mic'd up, and he was not happy about it. But the coach had to say, "Hey, we're saving you," because Birmingham was in the backfield the entire game. If you're watching the show live with us, you're seeing
Cook has kept going down. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So they had
his left knee was all messed up. He'd be getting hit. Yeah. They couldn't protect you. Right. He just kept going down and they just got him out of the game. The game wasn't in doubt. So, you know,
it was out of hand. It was definitely over that 12.2, you know, two possession lead here.
Yeah.
And the team you talked about being one dimensional, they were no dimensional, 139 yards passing. And with all 12 rushing attempts, they only attempted 12 runs, and that includes quarterback runs, a combined 0.6 yards per carry. Your best player in this game was Jonathan Adams, a wide receiver out of Arkansas State. 6 catches, 49 yards. Listen, I know we talk about Houston being the worst team in the league, and Arlington right now, despite having a decent offense, they're winless. So there can argument made there. I'm starting to wonder if Memphis is not the worst team in the league. I mean, I don't know the exact rushing yardage offhand, but I don't think they had 200 yards of offense in this game. I guess the question is Birmingham's defense really that good, or is Memphis this bad?
I think both. I think Memphis darn near, you know, beat San Antonio last week. That was a close game. Yeah. They lost with 3 seconds to go. Memphis they've won a game. Would they beat Houston week one? I think it was. So they're not horrible. They're not horrible. They didn't look good in this game. They just didn't look good. We talk about it every week. Offensive line play means so much in the UFL. It's so hard to find good offensive linemen in the NFL. And it's so hard to find guys that aren't already in the NFL on practice squads or anything else that are willing to play in the UFL and actually block some of these pass rushers like Taco Charlton, who, you know, dropped down to the UFL and wasn't, he was pretty bad in the NFL, but he's a good, decent player. Right. And not only that, I mean, the Birmingham Stallions actually have a defensive player on their team. I think he's a defensive lineman that has 6 sacks in the first 3 games. So they get after the quarterback. They have a quality defensive front. And yeah, it's tough, man. They did end up with over 200 yards positive offense. I'm sure with the sacks and everything, it didn't end up being 200 yards total. But poor Memphis.
I mean,
they're not up to par right now with a team like Birmingham. I, you know what? That's not even the story. That's not even the story. I don't even care about Memphis.
You're right. I think the story is
about what happened on the other sideline. Yeah.
Listen. So we've talked about it the last couple of weeks. There was a battle between Matt Corral and Adrian Martinez, and Martinez went the distance in this game. He got the start, over 300 passing yards, 2 touchdowns. He also averaged 8.8 yards a carry with a rushing touchdown in this game. Birmingham, listen, if it wasn't for my absolutely poor experience in Birmingham when South Carolina lost to UConn in the PapaJohns.com Bowl so many years ago, and it was the coldest game I've ever, still to this day, the coldest game I've ever been to. The stadium was not great. I don't remember the pizza being good. And I left the stadium before South Carolina actually scored in that game. And I stayed until the fourth quarter. So that should tell you something. If it wasn't for that, I might be on board with the Birmingham Stallions because they looked phenomenal in this game.
You would just be picking a winner at this point. Don't winner it out.
Like, bandwagon jumping. Yeah, I'd be bandwagon jumping.
I know.
I'd be admittedly bandwagon
jumping. What are you doing? I still have, honestly, you got it. It's funny you said that. I haven't picked a team yet. I'm not picking any team yet. I watched St. Louis play San Antonio this week, and I'm like, come on, San Antonio. I was Vamos Brahmas. That's what I kept saying the whole time. But
yeah.
But Birmingham, I hated their uniforms last year. And this year I'm like, well, Boston College is kind of growing on me. Like, it's looking pretty good right now.
Yeah.
And they look good. Here's why. We like quality football. And that's what they played this week. And Adrian Martinez. He was fantastic. Fantastic. Threw for 334 yards through the air, had 44 more yards on the ground. Mm-hmm. Dude's responsible for 300 and what is it? Do the math. 378
yards? 378
yards,
almost 400 yards of total offense.
By himself. I mean, and we're like, ooh, I wonder how good Matt Corral's going to be. Yeah, we're not going to see him again.
Nope.
Way to go, Chris Sims. Way to go, Chris Sims. He's really good throwing the ball around on the sideline. That's good. Good job, Chris. Way, good analysis because he told us how good he was, but nobody else in the UFL. Thanks, Chris.
Yeah. Adrian Martinez stole this job this weekend. And with all due respect, like he deserves it. I mean, you look, you still, and we talked about being two-dimensional on offense. Your starting running back, Ricky Person, averaged 4.6 yards a carry. He found the end zone. And then Deion Kane continues to have stellar games, former Clemson product, 7 catches, 144 yards. And we talked about this defense getting after the quarterback, 8 total sacks. And when they brought in Trey Williams to alleviate Case Cookus's beat up, getting pounded day, all they did was intercept him. So Birmingham Stallions look like the best team in the UFL. Would you agree, Bill?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yes.
It's
there's
not
only one
close.
Team that I feel like is even close, and I don't think they play defense as well. But, yeah, Birmingham is it bothers me a little bit because I'm rooting for the XFL teams.
Same.
Because that was my favorite league between the two. I don't think I like who cares? At this point, we're all one league, right? So they are good. They're very good, and they were very good last year in the USFL. And they had a different quarterback, Alex. And I find out where he is. He is in Green. He was at the game this week.
Yeah, he did interviews on the sidelines.
Yeah, and they actually had a decent crowd in the stands. They did a pretty good job getting some butts in the seats. But yeah, he was at the game this week. But he is on the Green Bay roster, so he made a team from being the quarterback last year. And if Adrian Martinez keeps playing like he did this week, I mean, he could do the same type of thing. He looked like him this week. It was fantastic.
Yeah, it's again. You want to watch a good quality football team, catch a Birmingham Stallions game, because there's some guys that will wind up on NFL rosters at some point going forward.
Got to feel like Deion Kane's going to latch on somewhere.
Deion Kane will make the league. Yeah. Absolutely. And it pains me to say that because my friend Aaron Thompson, who's in the chat, he's watching the show with us live. He's making a comment about going back to the military conversation. But as a Clemson fan, So let's get back to here for a second. Let's talk about Deion Kane. Amari Rodgers is returning kicks and punts for Birmingham. There's a lot of Clemson fans that I talk to, and I'm going to give another shout-out to Adam Berry. I talked about him on the show last week. I'm telling these guys, listen, you have a bunch of Clemson players in the league. If you need a reason to watch, go and watch to see guys like Deion Kane. Maybe Amari Rodgers breaks off a kickoff or a touchdown. Now, we're going to talk about him here in a minute, but Wayne Gallman is disappearing.
That shouldn't even be the reason. I get it. If you want to root for your ex, see, you're really a homer for like your old, college team players, that kind of thing. I'm not. Like Mark Thompson, by the way, he had a knee injury. He should be coming back. I'm excited about that. What is he playing for? Memphis? He's Memphis.
Maybe. I have to go back and look at my list, my notes.
But he'll be coming back. Maybe it was Houston. Maybe it was – I don't know. It doesn't matter. We have to look. Anyway, he might be coming back. That's Florida Gator. That was the best Florida Gator in the USFL last year. I don't care. I just want to watch good football. I want to watch good football. If there's good football on TV, I'm watching that over the Masters. I'm sorry to say that, but I am.
You've got to find a way to bring in new viewers. And if viewers don't care because they think spring football is garbage,
listen,
give them a reason. Go watch the guys that you enjoyed watching play in college. And then when you get to see them play in the UFL – now you're pleasantly surprised because there's good football on TV.
This isn't
now you're not
football. This isn't if you don't watch the UFL and you claim to be a football fan, you're lying. You're an NFL fan. There's a difference. If you think you're a football fan and you are not watching the UFL, you're not a football fan. You're either a college football fan and an NFL fan, or you're a football fan and you're watching the UFL.
Well, let's read this question. It's probably a decent question here for Mike Tackett over on Facebook. Should the Michigan Panthers play at Ford Field again next year or play somewhere else like Grand Valley State or even Keyworth Stadium? Would be a hell of a lot cheaper and look a lot better on TV.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad you brought up that question, because I believe we're talking about the Michigan game here next as Houston goes on the road and drops another one to stay winless for Michigan. But to his point, the initial game, I think this is Michigan's third straight home game.
Yeah.
And they started off, I think, over 10,000 fans. Then I believe somewhere between 8,000 and 9,000 fans. And this week it was between 7,000 and 8,000 fans. It's a spring league. Now, they were having snowstorms in West Virginia a couple of weeks ago. As much as I think that it would look better to put them in a smaller stadium to make the stadium look more full, from a logistics standpoint, I still think it makes sense to keep them in a dome, primarily because you don't want to see a snow game in March or April, potentially up north. We talked at length about the fact that we thought that, that the Miami Dolphins at Kansas City game in the playoffs in the NFL last year should have been postponed. We don't want to have to run into something like that. Now, granted, a lot of the other teams in the UFL play down south where it's at least warmer or warm at the start of spring football. So I like the idea of putting them in a smaller stadium. I just don't know how it would work logistically with the weather. Bill, you got any thoughts about that before we start talking about this game?
Well, I'm going to, he actually brought up two stadiums that I quickly, while you were talking, looked them up. Grand Valley State Stadium holds just over 10,000. Looks like they hold it in one end zone and one sideline for the most part. I don't think that would look bad as long as you put the cameras, you know,
on the right side. Places. Yeah.
Yeah. Over 10,000. I mean, that's pretty good for what they're getting right now. I mean, they're drawing under 8. So yeah, I think you could live with that. Keyworth Stadium. I just looked that up. That is the stadium capacity for that is actually under 8,000. So they would fill it at their current rate of what they're, but they would fill it. So I'm not sure you want to put everybody sitting exactly next to each other. So that might be a little on the small side, but I like the idea. It looks ridiculous being in the dome right now. That's too big. It's too big of a venue. Unless you're in St. Louis, the stadiums generally look pretty dumb. But you know, it's unfortunate. I do like DC's setup. DC's playing in a soccer-specific stadium. Obviously not so much now that the Defenders are playing there. But they're playing, and that looks fantastic. Because they bring 15,000 people into a stadium, if not more, that holds, you know, 19, 20,000, and you see empty seats, but it looks like there's a ton of people there. So I like the idea. I would get them out of the dome. So I like Grand Valley State. I mean, you're saying the weather's kind of cold up there at this point. I mean, it's football. Football. It's played in cold weather.
Phenomenal question, Mike. Please join the conversation more often. That was a great question. Not saying that. The other questions that we've had,
I like that he had specific stadiums. That's really good. I got to learn something.
Yeah, that was a great question. All right, let's look at the Houston-Michigan game. Houston drops to 0-3 on the year. Reed Sinnett has obviously taken over this offense from Jarrett Garantano. He did have 197 yards passing with a touchdown and an interception in this game. It's the same guys that we keep talking about every week on this team. Cyril Grayson is the new leading receiver this week, a wide receiver out of LSU with 40 yards receiving. This team was in it. They trailed 12-11 at halftime, but the third quarter it got away from them, and Michigan just sort of took over. Bill, I don't know what question to ask about the Houston Roughnecks. I mean, what are your thoughts this game? And
they stink. Just, that's what I said good. Last week, and they stink again this week. They stink. They're not good. That's the worst team in the league. Actually, it's going to be between them and Memphis to be the worst team in the league, and we don't know who's going to win that game yet because. Honestly, who would you pick? I think you'd probably pick Memphis. So yeah, I think Houston's Memphis, the worst team in the league. I like Reed Sinnett. I told you I liked Reed Sinnett for a long time. He played for the Dolphins. I've watched this guy came from San Diego State. I know about his college career. He was a pretty good passer at San Diego State. And I think he'll get a little better. Again, I think they're under fire there. Terrible offensive line play. They can't run the ball. They stink. They don't do a whole lot right. Michigan looked like they had Birmingham's offense this week. And we saw them struggle last week. So who's Michigan? We don't know. Is Houston that bad? Yeah, I think so.
You mentioned the running game. TJ Pledger averaged 2.4 yards a carry for Houston. But you talk about Michigan. Listen, this might be the team that I end up rooting for. Like 2-1 on the season. Yes. I'm leaning towards Michigan. I'm either leaning towards Michigan or St. Louis at this point, primarily because Michigan, you know, they play in Ford Field where my Lions play. And E.J. Perry is a guy that's out of Brown University, threw 3 incompletions this week. 3. He went 16 of 19 for 208 yards. He had 6.7 yards per carry with 2 rushing touchdowns out of Brown University. I mean, Michigan is that team that you don't expect to look good based on name recognition alone. Now, I am really happy because there's some other guys on this team that have somewhat of local ties to the South, North and South Carolina, for that matter. Your leading rusher in this game is out of Irmo High School. I'm not sure if it's at Irmo High School. Words are hard. He played at Wake Forest. Matthew Colburn, 9 carries, 28 yards. He was their leading rusher from the running back's perspective. But Noah Dawkins, if Aaron Thompson's still in the chat, Noah Dawkins, a linebacker, played at Burns High School down the road here in Duncan, Spartanburg, South Carolina. Played at the Citadel down in Charleston. 14 tackles and a pass breakup in this game. and the brother of Puka Nacua, another guy's eight awesome. Tackles, six solo.
Guy's awesome.
Had an interception.
We talk about him every week. We talk about him every week. Yeah.
And then obviously, and then the biggest story out of the UFL, Jake Bates, the kicker out of Arkansas, another perfect day kicking with a 46 and a 55 yarder.
55 yarder, like it was nothing. Like it was nothing. Yeah.
Why do you think I'm starting to kind of go towards Michigan? Because they got some local guys.
I'm thinking Dolphins could save some money on a kicker this year and get rid of our like $3 million a year kicker, pick up Mr. Bates. Come on.
It's funny because like he'll go and talk to the crowd after the games and like there's people in Lions gear like, please stay in Detroit. Please stay here.
We don't go anywhere. Don't ever leave.
Bill, we talked about Michigan struggling last week, but and I know we talked about bad Houston is. I mean, Houston did put up 20 points in this game, but Michigan looked like if you get a quarter out of them where they outscore Houston 22-3.
Yeah.
Michigan can be explosive, and they got playmakers on defense. I mean, what are your thoughts after watching this Michigan game?
I mean, this game was 20-14 at one point. You said it. Michigan absolutely went crazy. EJ Perry, we're not sure what he is right now. I mean, he's not a passer. He's not a good passer, but he uses his legs every single week. If you could stop this guy from running,
he's not a good passer.
He threw for 200 yards. Come on. It wasn't fantastic. But
he only threw three incompletions. He was efficient.
Only asked to throw 19 balls. I get it. So he's a game manager. That's just not a good passer. He's a game manager. But he runs. He runs. So as long as he's, you know, getting around and running a little bit. I mean, hey, we don't know who he is. But listen, he was stopped the week before. And we don't – I like him. He's out of Brown University. I can't wait to hear that every single week. Out of Brown University. Because that's not a normal school that you would see guys come out of. He seems like a small guy. He's – I don't love Michigan. I don't love, you know, if you pick them, I mean, I feel like it's you picking the Lions again, but hey, they're doing okay. They're doing okay. They're the only team that's anywhere close to Birmingham in the USFL conference.
Yep. I'm right there with you. Really, again, it was a fun game to watch. It was close. And then you got to see Michigan playmakers sort of take over here. But I think the game of the week the game that I was looking forward to the most this weekend was St. Louis at San Antonio, and St. Louis goes on the road and gets a huge win to improve to 2-1 on the season, 31-24. But I tell you what, they didn't impress me on offense. Now, granted, yeah, Jacob Sailors run for 62 yards on 7 carries, but I mentioned it earlier. Wayne Gallman is nowhere to be found. I don't know if he's injured because there's no injury report on the UFL website, so there's no stats for Wayne.
Find out later, like during the broadcast.
But we finally get to see Hakeem Butler make an appearance with 87 yards and a touchdown in this game. What did you like that you saw out of St. Louis this week to improve them to 2-1?
It's a good offense. It's a really good offense. McCarron looks really good. I think we both thought that he would, and he does.
Yeah,
he's looked really good. They're fun to watch. He didn't throw for a ton of yards, but he's running the offense well. They can run the ball, which we've talked about how important that is. You got to be, you know, two-dimensional on offense unless you get amazing quarterback play. And honestly, they can kind of have both. Akeem Butler was fantastic. I think there was a third down and a bunch, like third and 17 or something like that, and he went over the middle and just jumped over everybody. I mean, the dude's like 6'12". He's massive, huge guy. Yeah. Jumps over everybody and catches the ball. The guys are swatting at it, and it fumbled around. He made the catch. It was like a 30-yard play on it, and I'm thinking, boy, San Antonio really needed to make the play right there, and Hakeem Butler's just too big for that guy, for those guys. I like St. Louis. I can't get behind them. I can't deal with all the blue. I can't. It's too much blue. It looks like somebody had a blue Sharpie, and the cap came off in their pocket, and it just blew everywhere on their clothes. It's just too much blue. I can't do it. But they're fun to watch. They're really fun to watch.
Well, here's a uniform that you've touted as the best in the XFL, and now
still think it is. Still think it is.
San Antonio falls to 2-1, lose their first game on the season. It's Chase Garbers, and this is a bigger story, and we'll get to that here in a second because I've actually got a second ticker to go across the screen here. But Chase Garbers out of Cal goes 27-41 for 143 yards. That's a lot of passes for no yards. You've got some. I got to see my Anthony McFarland pick preseason, 9 carries, 39 yards, and a touchdown in this game. Cody Latimer continues to impress and grow more in this offense with another touchdown this week. You talk about you talk about defensive players. I believe I've typoed this in the ticker. If you're watching the live video, Jordan Williams, linebacker at Baylor, had 8 tackles and a sack in this game. But Bill, San Antonio drops their first game on the year. They scored with 2 minutes and 10 seconds left. They still trailed and they kicked off. Like, well, what was San Antonio's thought process
actually
by not going to 4th and 12?
They interviewed Wade Phillips on the sideline and said, "Coach, why wouldn't you have gone for the onside kick there?" And he turned around and looked at the guy that was interviewing him and said, "What?" And he says, Why didn't you go for the onside kick?" He goes, "I have 3 timeouts." And he walked off. Like, he's just, "Don't bother me with this. Like, this is ridiculous. Why would you even ask this question?" It was great. I started laughing at the time. But yeah, they kicked off. They got the ball back. They got the ball back with a minute left or a minute and some left. They just, Garbers couldn't take him down the field. Garbers was throwing for 5 yards per attempt. Not even. It was really low. He just couldn't get it. Maybe his wrist was hurt at that time. Who knows? But we end up finding out after the game that he's out for the season. So, yeah. But yeah, they got the ball back. So Wade Phillips wasn't exactly wrong. They did get the 3-and-out on St. Louis.
Yeah, you mentioned Chase Garbers out for the year. What does that mean for San Antonio? I mean, they were undefeated until this game. They lose their starting quarterback. I without looking it up, like,
oh, I know,
off the top of my head.
I know. The Orlando Guardians live, baby. The Orlando Guardians live. It is Quentin Dorbity time. That's the backup quarterback. Let's go.
I don't like that. Yeah, Shannon says AJ was balling in that game. I don't know if I like Quentin Dorbity.
I love Quentin. Come on, man. I can wear my sweatshop Orlando Guardians t-shirt again. It fits like a smock. Like, I need to be, I don't know. It's terrible. I won't put it
so
on.
So having said that, do you think with Dorbity at quarterback, do you think the San Antonio is still a threat in this XFL division?
I think they have one of the best backup quarterbacks in the UFL. Yeah, I think he's pretty good. We saw him play in Orlando, and there was a couple of games where we thought they were a one-win team, Orlando. And we actually, before the last 2 games of the season, thought that Quentin Dorbity was the best quarterback prospect in the XFL. And then he laid an egg for 2 weeks. But, yeah. I mean, that team was terrible. They had 3 players get drafted in the dispersal draft. 3.
Dorbity
was one of them. So, yeah, I think it's going to be we've seen Guarantano started the year for Houston. Terrible. Gets benched. They get a little bit better. Reed Sinnett seems to be a better quarterback. You saw Matt Corral start the year for Birmingham. Didn't play well. You watch Martinez come in this week, and he's amazing. Maybe the same thing will happen in San Antonio. Maybe they picked – and why coaches do this, I have no idea. But clearly these other coaches were wrong and had the wrong starter in the games. And we'll see what happens here with Dorbity playing. But that's what I'm hoping for. Vamos promise. I enjoy that.
Well, Shannon Smith expects to see UFL expansion and the Guardians come back. I don't know if Orlando gets a franchise again.
They averaged more than teams. Michigan that you're going to go root for. Almost double.
I mean, okay.
I mean, they had a game over 12. Not almost double. That's terrible. They were under 10 average, but I mean, not 7. Maybe it was close to 7.
Yeah,
I don't know.
You know, I'm thinking Vegas. Vegas couldn't put butts in the seats.
No.
Like, it felt like Vegas put 500 people in the stadium every week.
We need one in Charlotte.
Charlotte, Atlanta, Greenville. We've got 2 soccer teams here. They can put a UFL team up at Furman or at Wofford. Spartanburg was the 15th fastest growing city in America last year, and they're getting a minor league baseball team. The upstate of South Carolina.
It's a single A team. Calm down.
It doesn't matter.
Stadium's only going to hold 3,500 people.
They're still bringing in professional baseball into the upstate. We're going to have 2 minor league baseball teams up here. We can manage a UFL team here that we can call the Carolina, whatever, the Carolina Guardians, and appeal to both North and South Carolina. Bill, we're up against it. So let's talk about week 4 of the UFL coming up this weekend. The Memphis Showboats at the St. Louis Battlehawks. This game is going to be played 12:30 p.m. on ABC. Another weird start time. The Battlehawks, a 7-point favorite. Bill, who you got here? Memphis at St. Louis.
St. Louis covers that. We're going to go with St. Louis.
Yep. We talked about it earlier. Memphis isn't that good. St. Louis is better than that. That one loss that they have this season.
Do we even know how we're doing this year? Do we know? We haven't paid
attention. I can go back and listen. We'll figure it out.
Maybe we're terrible at this.
We'll go once we get to week five. I'll go back and listen to all the picks. And
this is an interesting game this week because of DC coming back on Arlington. This game got really interesting with about 4 seconds to go in the DC Arlington game.
Oh, Trey Tolles comes in the chat thinking that that Charleston needs a UFL team.
That's far away for us still. Come on,
it's 3 hours.
Birmingham's far. We can get to Birmingham in 5. Like, I don't want to drive an extra. We could really go. We really could.
Yeah, we could. All right. DC Defenders at Birmingham. We talked about the way the DC came back this past week on Arlington. The Birmingham Stallions are the best team in the UFL, but they're 8-point favorites. This is one of two games being played Saturday night on Fox. 8 points is a big, big spread. But I don't see how they don't cover. Give me Birmingham, Bill. Who you got?
That's a really big spread. And that's in Birmingham. Yeah, I'll go with Birmingham as well. Until Birmingham gets beat or anyone really challenges them, I think you have to go with them.
That's how we were about DC last year, too.
I know. So, yeah. I know.
All right. The second game playing Saturday night at 7 o'clock, also on Fox. So I'm guessing we're going to get regional coverage.
It's market. It's market.
Yeah. I'm hoping maybe they have it like on the Fox Sports app where you can watch either
Might
game.
Might be able to. But, it says they have an asterisk on the UFL website. And it says subject to market regionalization.
Yeah, I forgot. Trey mentioned too that we used to have an arena football team down in Charleston, the Swamp Foxes. So yeah, maybe they try.
Is that a thing? Is that a real animal?
Swamp Fox? We'll talk about it off the air. and Shannon thinks that Birmingham kills him too. So Shannon's back.
What about that. Google?
All right, Michigan at San Antonio. The other game on Fox at 7 o'clock Saturday night. This is basically a pick'em. San Antonio is a 1-point favorite. Bill, who you got? San Antonio playing host. Michigan's first road game of the season. Who you got?
You know what? I'm going to go with my boy, man. I'm going to say Quentin Dormady carries the Brahmas, man. I'm excited to see this guy play. You know, I want to watch that DC Defenders Birmingham Stallions, but just because Dormady, my Orlando Guardians quarterback, is going to be playing for San Antonio, I'll probably be watching this game. So give me San Antonio.
Give me Michigan to win outright. Jake Bakes is going to kick another 60-yard field goal in this game. So give me – and it'll be his first road field goal. So we'll get to see what he'll be able to do on the road. And give me Michigan. Your final game of the week, it comes Sunday, 2 o'clock.
Otherwise known as the Toilet Bowl.
Yeah, the Toilet Bowl. The 0-3 Arlington Renegades, the 0-3 Houston Roughnecks. There will be one team this weekend. One team after this weekend that will remain winless in the UFL. Arlington, a 3-point favorite. Shannon talking about the most popular player on any league is a kicker in Jake Bates. Listen, Arlington.
It's amazing. He did something that nobody's done. Yeah. That somebody's only done once in the entire history of football.
Yeah. Listen, Arlington, I think they're better than their 0-3 record. They were 2 minutes away from getting the win over DC last weekend. Give me Arlington, man. Houston's just that bad, even on the road. They're both in Texas. So Bill's going to go on
Arlington as well.
All right. We're in overtime, Bill. Anything else you want to add before we sign off for the evening?
No. Looking forward to the games this weekend and go Rangers.
Go. I mean, I'm not going to say go Rangers. I'll say go Canes.
Oh, come on. How about go Swamp Rabbits? We'll go Swamp Rabbits.
Go Swamp Rabbits. Let's go Rabbits.
Hockey this week, too. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
It's like let's go Bits.
Let's go Bits. Ah, that's weird. Know, I'm going to say let's go. Yeah.
Rabbits. I know.
All right, folks. That's been the football show. Thank you if you watch live with us over on facebook.com/tapoutsandtouchdowns. If you're not watching there and you haven't gone and done it, make sure you go like and follow our page on Facebook. Thanks for if you watched on X at tapoutsandtds. Also, if you haven't gone to follow us on X, please do that. We're trying to get some followers on X here. It's been around for a while. I don't do the greatest job about promoting our X/Twitter. So go and give us a follow on X. Invite your friends.
It could be on the screen right now. Oh, it is. Look at this guy. What a good job.
The X handle on the screen for you so you know where to go follow.
It's just an X.
Yeah, it's X. It's Twitter. Twitter is now X. That's all it is.
That's not a handle. Is that a handle? Anyway.
That's a handle. Yeah, and then YouTube. If you watch on YouTube, thank you as well. At Tapouts and Touchdowns on YouTube so you can listen to our show or watch our show every week live on one of those platforms. Listen, this has been a fun show. A lot of football talk. We got to talk some college football. Next week, we have a pretty fun, exciting show for you. Next week is the NFL draft.
Bring your draft. Bring your mocks. Yours against ours. Come on, let's go. Bring your mocks. We'll beat you.
Uncle Gary, send us some love to Florida as well. Yeah, we're gonna do a couple of mock drafts next week on the show to prepare us for the NFL draft. We're gonna sort of speculate on some picks in the NFL draft. Maybe some news drops before that happens. And then we're going to get to talk UFL week four and look forward.
Mainly the NFL draft, though. We're just going to go over UFL quickly. The draft is the thing.
Yeah, the draft is the thing because the draft starts next Thursday. I had it in my notes here. I don't know the exact date. I guess a week. It's the 25th. April 25th.
Bears are on the clock.
And also the WWE draft starts next week, if you care about it. We're gonna bring another wrestling show here soon with PJ Steven and I. We're going to talk about the Windy City Riot that took place, a New Japan pro wrestling event that took place in Chicago, Illinois. It's been at least a week now. But with WrestleMania past, there is some other wrestling news out of WWE to talk about. We'll get on. We were supposed to do a show this week. We couldn't come together with our schedules. We will come together to do another wrestling show for you sometime in the very near future. But again, that's been our football show this week. Hopefully you all enjoyed. Thanks for everybody who participated in the chat. Always feel free to come and join the conversation in our football shows. For Banker Bill, it's your guy, Bully Rye. We'll see you next time right here on Tap Outs and Touchdowns.